Sun's Weekend All. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the July 31st edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. My final show for July tips off with the first National Basketball Association games in more than 4.5 months. With no fans in attendance Thursday night because of the coronavirus pandemic, the NBA resumed its season in Orlando, Florida. Before the two games, players bowed their heads and knelt during the playing of the U.S. national anthem while wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts. Coaches and game officials joined the players from the Utah Jazz, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Los Angeles Clippers. They joined other athletes from around the world who have protested racial injustice and police brutality sparked by the death of George Floyd in May. Black Lives Matter was also written on the courts in Orlando, where the NBA plans to finish its season inside a quarantine bubble. Both games were close. The Jazz defeated the Pelicans 106-104, and the Lakers also edged their city rival, the Clippers, by 2 points. As we hear now from the AP's Mark Myers.
The NBA season resumed Thursday in Orlando, and in a game that came down to the final moment, the Lakers beat the Clippers 103-101. LeBron James made the go-ahead layup with 13 seconds remaining.
I love having the ball in my hands, you know, late in the game, tie game, being down, being up. You know, we had a three-point game with like 40 seconds to go. We got a a great look for Danny. He missed it. Paul George came back and hit a three to tie the game. And for me, just try to, you know, be aggressive.
James finished with 16 points, 11 rebounds, and 7 assists. Anthony Davis scored 34. Paul George led the Clips with 30, but missed a three-point try at the buzzer. I am Mark Myers.
Yo, yo, yo! Sporty greetings, man. I'm Evelyn Akato, forward for the Tigers Nigerian Women's National Team and Flams Carolo Basket. Bonjour, bonjour, my people. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contacting COVID-19. Thank you so much.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sunny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Samson Omale joins us now with a package of African sports news.
We begin with the World Athletics Council approving new dates for the World Under 20 Championships Nairobi 2020. The World Under 20 Championships will now be held in Nairobi, Kenya from 17th to the 22nd of August 2021, 1 week after the Tokyo Olympic Games. Staying with athletics, World 10,000 Meters Champion Uganda Joshua Cheptegei says he's confident he will make it to the season opening Diamond League meet in Monaco. The long distance runner is not happy that COVID-19 inadvertently interrupted one of his most successful seasons.
We have been pushed the walls when it comes to opportunities, when it comes to racing abroad in Europe, in America, in Asia. So this means that we cannot make the most of our career. My plans earlier on, of course, has been to win the Olympic Games, like at 10K gold, and of course also medal in the 5K. So perhaps maybe if it all goes well, perhaps next year, I can still go back to Tokyo and do what I'm best at doing, and that's winning the gold.
Spotty, greetings. This is Sunday Dare, Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Now to Nigeria, where the country's Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Sunday Dare, says henceforth, the Nigerian Football Federation will deregister football clubs who fail to meet club licensing rules.
What we've had in the past is that several of these clubs have found a way to get licensed and approved to compete without fulfilling this. I think we're entering a new regime of enforcement, and we hope that that will protect the players, because without the players, you know, you can't talk about football and the domestic league.
Finally, renowned lawyer and writer Bestine Kazadi, who made history by becoming the first woman ever to be elected as president of Democratic Republic of Congo football giants AS Vita Club early this month, has been speaking on her new role.
I have fought all my life for strong leadership, and my election is a lever. As president, it's a large African club. Confirms that nothing is impossible, and that it does not matter whether one is a woman or a man. When the passion with a goal, courage, and daring to realize a dream, anything is possible. Certainly, my success will serve as a model, a pulse for young girls.
I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week. Right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Thanks, Heather. That's Heather Maxwell, the host of our Music Time in Africa show. And this Voice of America history note, Music Time in Africa is the VOA's longest running English language program. It was founded in 1965 by the late, great Leo the Music Man Sarkeesian. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. The Athletics Integrity Unit recently suspended, or provisionally suspended, four Kenyan runners for whereabouts violations or testing positive for performance-enhancing drugs. In this encore Sunny Side of Sports presentation, the energetic Andy Edwards reflects on whether he thinks doping is widespread in Kenya athletics. Sporty greetings from Washington, Andy.
Greetings from London, Sonny. 25 years ago, when the question of whether elite Kenyans or East African runners in general were taking performance-enhancing drugs came up for discussion among journalists covering track and field athletics, as well as road running, this was my response. If you mean on a widespread level, I doubt that very much. I also would have said, and still say now, that it's going to be impossible to eradicate the problem of drug taking in sport completely. Not just athletics, but I mean the potential for drug use at the top level in any sport. And I emphasize this word completely. But by having a stringent system of testing and punitive measures, much can be done to reduce it. It's like tax dodging. There will always be those who try it, but if more get caught, fewer might try it. Now my answer has taken a different perspective. Although I still believe that the Kenyan men and women we see achieving such great feats on the track and the road have great talent. those who rise to the top, that is, are able to come through a tough system where only the best survive to earn a living from running, join running camps, and earn sums which transform the lives of themselves and their families, possess great talent. It is a talent developed, in my view, through lifestyles over centuries. Daily toil, hard, physical work, herding cattle over long distances, and sometimes defending their cattle from rustlers. Physicality, ability to endure, developing stamina have been necessary tools for living over centuries. I have never met a Kenyan runner who did not come from what we in Western society would call the country. Here's an example. I remember interviewing Jeffrey Rono in Prague 5 years ago. Now, among the hundreds of elite Kenyans, he's not a big name, but he was emerging on the international scene and also worked full-time as a wildlife ranger in Kenya. He said, "I've been running for 3 years. With experience, I have learnt what this means in the Kenyan context. Not running from scratch, but being good enough to have joined a running camp and earn something, however small, from road running." He agreed that his boyhood featured big training, except he and his brothers didn't think of it as such. This is how he explained it. "I come from a polygamous family, and my father would regularly say to us boys, take these cattle to that village, give them to Uncle so-and-so, and bring more cattle back. It would be maybe 26 miles there and back. We would walk and jog all the way, but we didn't think we were training." Now, that's the kind of life which forms potential distance runners without burning young bodies and minds out, with a coach urging practice, practice all the time. Why do I now consider that Kenya definitely has a problem with some elite runners producing positive drug tests? Professional running there has become a way to transform your life, and road running, above all, offers that means. Why road running? Because there are fewer opportunities in track races, simply because the field for, say, 3,000 metres would be limited to 16 runners at most. Also, the commercial visibility of an African track runner for the shoe and sportswear companies is modest, unless they are a big star winning global medals. That is the commercial reality. In a road race, a promoter, if they have enough budget, can stack their half marathon or marathon with 30 or more East Africans, including pacemakers. And taking €500 home will still be worthwhile for a Kenyan. Hence, the temptation is there. And no other sport offers the same pot of gold in Kenya for the highest achievers. I think there's a danger that we athletics journalists only view countries such as Kenya as one big running camp, because that's our perspective day to day. Now, I make no claims to be an expert on Kenyan politics, but I can see from scanning the news that life there can arouse strong feelings, conflict and debate, to put it mildly. In recent years, German TV has done documentaries alleging that drugs are readily available from some local pharmacies in Kenya. Other TV has shown a Kenyan coach allegedly agreeing to warn what he thought was an agent, but actually a journalist, of impending drug tests in return for a fee. These may be isolated incidents, but the number of tests and suspensions are gathering momentum and cannot be ignored. How might this affect public perception of athletics around the world? This might sound surprising, but I wonder if it will have much negative effect at all. Athletics strikes me as unique, since the mass participants, the thousands who run marathons, often for charity, have little or no interest in elite performances and their achievements, unlike amateur footballers, golfers, or cricketers. I know this at first hand, since I have run with many over the past 40 years. The mass road runners care about their own personal bests and what they raised for charity. Some would now recognize Eliud Kipchoge because of his world records shown on TV and performances in London and Berlin, and especially breaking 2 hours in Vienna last October. They'd also recognize Haile Gebrselassie, but the list might end there. In the midst of pandemic and lockdowns, races cancelled around the globe, the general running public are not giving much thought to positive drug tests by Kenyans or anybody else. They want to know when they can run in proper races again. But that doesn't mean that there aren't problems in Kenya or elsewhere. Only they may continue to be obscured by economic threats to many events in general. For the Sunnyside of Sports, this is Andy Edwards in London.
I'm Kendra Harrison. I'm the 100 hurdle world record holder for Team USA, and you're listening to the Sunnyside of Sports on the Voice of America.
Just ahead, my Voice of America colleague, Jim Stevenson, has some football, athletics, and Major League Baseball news for us.
Mere days after its belated beginning, the 2020 Major League Baseball season is facing strike two because of COVID-19. On Monday, news broke that 11 of 33 Miami Marlins players who traveled with the team to Philadelphia for their opening series tested positive for the virus, as well as two coaches. That news prompted Major League Baseball to postpone two games that were scheduled for Monday, the Marlins' home opener against the Baltimore Orioles and Philadelphia's contest against the New York Yankees. Phillies fans like Diane Vidnarek were cautiously happy to see baseball return.
Honestly, I was expecting it. I'm a huge Phillies fan. I was very excited they were back, but I didn't think that they were going to make it through the season. I honestly didn't think it would be this quick, but I'm not surprised. I mean, COVID has just taken over lately, so not surprised at all.
But she says it was too early to try to play.
I don't think they should have came back, no. I was excited that they were back, but I don't think they should have.
Another Phillies fan, and Terry Hamm, feels Major League Baseball's virus protocols didn't work.
Well, I was disappointed that they even came up here. I didn't think they should make the trip up here, knowing that they were exposed to COVID. And they're actually in a hot spot in Florida.
On Tuesday, news broke that four more Marlins players tested positive, bringing the number of team members with confirmed cases in recent days to 17. With no minor leagues this season, teams are allowed to retain 60 players each, including a taxi squad of up to three players for every road trip, giving them immediate options to replace an injured or infected player. But even with the unusual latitude, the recent infections have already thrown the shortened baseball season in doubt.
Play ball!
With no fans in attendance at Major League Baseball games, the planned shortened season was not welcome news for area businesses dependent on a usually guaranteed flow of spectators before and after games. Mohamed El Mardi works at Brass Rail Pizza Bar near Comerica Park in Detroit.
That's huge. From the Lions, Tigers, hockey, and the Pistons, all. That's something huge for us. If it's not going on, our business is down.
Kenny Valentino is assistant general manager at Del Mar Detroit, a rooftop bar and restaurant just a short walk from the stadiums. He is hoping some fans will still want to be near the playing fields for a sense of connection.
The real fans will still want to come out and be around other fans and not just watch the games at home. So we're really hoping that that will help draw some extra traffic.
Adrian Tonan with the city of Detroit says ballpark businesses are doing the best they can, although some will end up going out of business.
It's something that we're rolling with and we're giving our best effort. But there's absolutely going to be businesses that you're not going to see, that some legacy businesses too, I'm sure, that are not going to be here.
Despite the tough times, Detroit Tigers manager Ron Gardenhire is optimistic.
Somehow or another, hopefully baseball at least puts a smile on their face while we're playing here, and maybe hopefully sometime during this summer they'll start opening up where our fans can get back in and some of the businesses are able to open up, and hopefully that's what baseball is going to bring.
I think whilst we've got coronavirus around without a vaccine, I think that's going to be very, very difficult to do. I really can't see that happening in the next year.
Chair of the British Government Committee on the Return of Elite Sports, James Calder, says the coronavirus pandemic will make it very difficult for English Premier League matches to be held with full attendances for at least another year.
I think we'd probably be looking at a maximum 25% foot capacity. I think realistically that's what's going to happen. It will depend upon each stadium as to how that works.
Calder played an integral role in helping the Premier League return in June after a 100-day shutdown, with supporters excluded from stadiums and twice weekly coronavirus testing on players and coaches.
Certainly we have not seen any outbreaks within football at all. So there may have been players who've tested positive, but they have not transmitted that to any other players. Some of them, you know, you could argue whether all the mitigation measures that have been put in place by the clubs has worked. And the same, I believe, is true for the Bundesliga and elsewhere across Europe.
Calder says cricket virus protocols helped to lead the way for British football to begin playing again.
The view taken by Nick Pearce, is the chief medical officer for cricket, and David Mahoney is the CEO for ECB, was it's keep them in their own bubble. And then we've got complete control. It's very, very difficult for the players.
The season ends on Sunday, and Calder urged players to avoid going on their holidays to COVID-19 hotspots, such as the United States, Brazil, India, and Pakistan. Juventus fans are celebrating winning their ninth straight Serie A title. Juventus captain Leonardo Bonucci says it is a special achievement for fans during a difficult time.
Ed eravamo solo noi padroni del nostro destino.
Destiny was in our hands, and we did win our ninth straight Serie A title, the 33rd for Juventus. We want to dedicate this title to our fans who cannot celebrate with us in the stadium, but I'm sure that they've done it outside. We've had very difficult months with the pandemic outbreak, and some of our fans have left us, but I'm sure they enjoy it from heaven.
Di questa pandemia purtroppo ci ha lasciato, ma avrà gioito in alto nel cielo.
Juventus manager Maurizio Sarri says this title was a unique challenge.
Ma è come stava dicendo Leo prima, penso sia stato uno dei più difficili per la.
I believe this has been one of the most difficult championships for everything that has happened. If you think that we started our preseason on July 6th last year and we won the tournament on July 26th the next year, it's something difficult, and I'm not going to accept someone to tell me that to stay 50 or 60 days at home during the lockdown, watching many people dying, has been a relaxing period of time. It's been a very complicated and hard season. In sport, football, and in life, you can never take anything for granted. To win is always difficult. To win for 2 or 3 years is difficult. To make it for 9 years, as some of these players have done, is something extraordinary.
Per 9 anni, come hanno fatto alcuni di questi ragazzi, e penso un'impresa straordinaria.
Handing out the honors at the White House, President Donald Trump bestowed the Presidential Medal of Freedom, one of the nation's highest civilian honors, to Jim Ryan, a former Republican congressman, the first U.S. high schooler to break the 4-minute barrier in running the mile, and an Olympian.
He's a giant of American athletics, a dedicated public servant, and a man of charity, generosity, and faith. He's a great man, actually. Jim, thank you so much for your unfailing devotion to our country, and congratulations on a lifetime of incredible success.
Ryan, now age 73, was the 1968 Olympic silver medalist in the 1500-meter run and is a 3-time Olympian. As a 17-year-old junior, he became the first high school athlete to break the 4-minute barrier when he ran the mile in 3 minutes and 59 seconds. That year, he went on to qualify for the Tokyo Olympics in 1964.
I will tell you, it is one of the greatest honors and privileges of my life to represent this amazing country and to wear the stars and stripes on my chest while racing in the 60s and 70s. There was such pride and love of country.
Jim Ryan was named the Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year in 1966, the year he smashed the world record in the mile at 3 minutes 51.3 seconds. Ryan went on to serve as a member of Congress in the House representing a Kansas congressional district from 1996 to 2006.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. And let's give a sunny side of sports salute to that other Jim, Jim Ryan, for being awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom. Getting back to Jim Stevenson, Jim's Game Room opens with new stories each week, or you can play anytime via voanews.com. And that wraps up the July 31st edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Have a nice weekend, everyone. And that's the sunny side of sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation of the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this
music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues.
It's about listening to them
and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.